And welcome to another episode of GT Radio. This is Tino Magneto. And tonight I have Jemada Schwinden as a guest here. And she is fantastic and a bubbly character, and she knows her stuff. How are you, Jemada?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Actually, we were talking about our dogs, right, before we came on. And I was telling you how my dog wakes up my son every morning, and they have a special connection with us, those dogs. You have four of them, right?
I do. I have four dogs, and yeah, absolutely. Part of our family. It's amazing how much they love us and how much we love them.
What are their names?
We have Jimmy, Lucy, Edgar, and Beatrice.
Wow. and Romeo, which is my dog. So my wife has already looked at a white female cocker spaniel, and she's going to name it Juliet.
Oh,
and we're
going to
have
cute.
a formal wedding ceremony for them. So stay tuned for that. That's my wife's idea.
Oh my gosh, I have to see that.
I'm just going to go along with it. Okay. Tell me a little bit about where you were born.
I was born in Washington State, just outside of Burlington, Washington. It's a funny story. I was actually born at home. My parents wanted a home birth, and so somehow my mother convinced my dad that this was a great idea.
So you were delivered at home, right? Skagit County, right?
Yep, in Skagit County. My mother had a very history of long labors. There's six of us, and I'm right in the middle, children.
Wow.
And so she called the doctor and said, I think I'm in labor. And he said, okay, well, I'll see you in, several hours. He misjudged his time and didn't show up till after I was born. So my father actually had to deliver me at home.
Wow. Wow, amazing. And you said
yeah.
to me that, we weren't rich, but you could always find a home and a warm meal. There was always that you could count on, right? There were humbler times, but they were special times.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We grew up, there were seven of us children. But we always had more than that at the home. There was always someone who didn't have a safe place to live or someone who needed to stay at the house for a little while. And my mom never turned anyone away. My parents never turned anyone away. And my mom always made the food stretch so that everyone was full. And we had enough blankets
like
for
a family.
Everyone. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, extended family. Now, you grew up on the res, right?
No. Actually, I grew up just off the reservation, about 20 miles 20 miles north of our reservation. But we spent lots of time on the reservation. we didn't have a washing machine, actually, so we would go over to my aunts and uncles and spend two or three days over there, and my mom would wash all her laundry and visit with everybody. And so I spent quite a bit of time on the res.
Yeah. How was it growing up before gaming? Because you remember before gaming too, right?
Right. Before gaming, the tribe was a very humble tribe as well, and did what they could to help tribal members, but definitely didn't have the amount of resources that they have now, that Swinomish has now. We had a fish plant, and the fishermen shared their fish. And, I remember my mom going down there and the tribe providing fish for the different families. But, it was a lot different. I think we had one small enterprise, one little store, right in the middle of the village, we called it, right in the middle of our reservation. You know, I believe it was a liquor store.
Right.
And that was it. Didn't generate a whole
that
lot of
it.
Income.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. And you had a small fishery too, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So
that was the main. A lot of people for the salmon and the food, right?
Yep, that's what we had. We had a small fisheries. I think the fisheries opened. I mean, we had a fish plant for as long as I can remember, but I think it opened in the mid 70s. And so that would, you know, kind of help out our tribal fishermen and fisherwomen.
Yeah, that's, especially in Washington, it has the best salmon. You can never get enough of it.
Oh, yeah.
And they make it. Everybody makes it so many different ways. It's amazing. It's an amazing thing.
Oh, yes. I love, growing up in the Pacific Northwest has definitely spoiled with, you know, fresh seafood. I remember being on the beach and going out catching crab and cooking it up right on the beach and
spoiled.
Eating crab and salmon.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. The best food, man. No replacement for that. It's, you can't eat anything better than that. It's that's amazing stuff. And being Italian myself, we're really into seafood, so I totally know where you're coming from. And you had said that before. You said that you know, if there wasn't enough, the neighbors would cook, and you guys made it stretch, right? It was one tight-knit community.
Yeah. You know, and I feel like, you know, I feel like we're blessed still to this day with that mentality at our reservation. You know, it seems, you know, in times of need, people pull together and provide whatever's needed for whichever family is needy at the time.
Yeah, they would help each other.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that's something that we still do. That...
You went to school in Burlington, right?
Correct.
And tell us a little bit about that experience.
I went to a school in Burlington. I had, like I said before, I had several brothers and sisters, and they had gone to the same school before me, so they had kind of...
It was easy for you, yeah.
Yeah, they made it a little bit easier for me. They paved the way.
Cool.
But, you know, it wasn't without its challenges.
Yeah, well, you were saying, you know, it wasn't as acceptable back then to be Native. You know, it was the racism, there was more racism.
I think people were just more open with their racism, you know.
Yeah.
People didn't think it was offensive to call my dad Indian George.
Yeah. Until social media came along.
Yeah.
Or anything you did wrong. Yeah. Exactly. No, of course. I totally understand. It was more difficult. There's no question about it. And also being a woman and being Native, right? That even had more challenges.
I think you know, when you see it all over, I mean, just being a woman presents itself with challenges in itself, and especially if you are wanting to grow up and go into a profession where, you know, there's not a lot of women.
Never, let alone Native women.
Correct.
Yeah, it gives you the double whammy.
Right. You know, so, but, you know, like I told you before, that which doesn't break you makes you stronger.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Now your brothers fished, right? And you, there was some battles going on there that was pretty terrifying at the time. We always talked about, you know, we just spoke about the fish and how good it was, but you know, there was some bad stuff going on, right?
Yeah, you know, I was like I said, I was born in the middle, but there was a little gap, so I was pretty young, but I remember them, you know, they did fish, and I remember there was always the battle between non-native and native fishermen, and, you know, yeah, it could be a scary time. You know, they weren't willing to help each other out, or if something was wrong, they're, you know, I don't know the ins and outs because, like I said, I was younger. But, you know, I remember my mom being worried, extremely worried about my brothers on the boat. And, two of my brothers. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Two of my brothers.
Oh, two of my brothers still fish, or they have started fishing again after several years of not fishing.
Wow.
It's a lot less stressful, I think, now than it was before. There's still some times where I'm worried, but I don't worry like my mom worried.
Yeah, your mom worried more, didn't she? She was always.
Yeah, she was always worried, you know, and I think it was also, you know, fishing is definitely not what it used to be, so there used to be a lot more fish and a lot more profitable. And so with that comes, you know, people wanting more of their, what they perceive as their share.
Right. Yeah, of course. The greed gets into it, right?
Yeah.
That's what's really the motivator.
That's when it gets scary, right?
Yeah.
So.
How did those hurdles shape you as a person? And how do you think you endured it?
You know, like you said in the beginning of our conversation, you know, we had such a strong family and strong community that I was, you know, I felt like I was protected from that, from those things. And so I think I just learned to be strong and stand up for what I believe in and to, you know, face things head on. So, but I always had the support of my family behind me and my siblings. It's always nice when you have older siblings to protect you.
Yeah. Yeah. There always is. That doesn't hurt. You said to me that you pick and choose your battles. I learned when it's not with my energy. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I learned tolerance and acceptance, right? There's times where that somebody has a belief, and however misguided that belief may be, there's times where you know you can change their perspective or help them see something from your perspective. And there's times where that you know that they think they're so right and their hate or misguidance runs so deep that there's no way to change it. And I mean, so for those people, you pray for them and move on, but you can't carry their negative energy with you.
Yeah. You got to let it go.
Yeah. So I think I told you the story of that guy who was a potential vendor for us, and he wanted to know if I was a little, if I was a little Indian girl, I think is how he put it.
Wow.
So, and he said it was okay because he married himself a little a little Indian girl, and he had little Indian babies. And it was just like, and I, but,
that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
And he saw absolutely nothing wrong with how he was referred. This, by the way, this was 3, maybe 4 years ago.
Yeah,
so,
it's not that long ago.
It's not that long ago.
Not that long ago. No.
So,
now you also get that. You also get that. Whenever you know you're introduced as working for the tribe and the level you're at, mm-hmm. people are always like probably thinking in their heads, "Well, she just got her position because she's a tribal member," but they don't know your background.
They don't know my
so
background, and they don't.
Yeah.
Oftentimes they don't keep it in their head. They will come right out and say it. They will vocalize it, and again, don't think that that's offensive at all. You know, they're like, that's how you got where you're at. You know, and they don't think that is offensive or a negative thing to say. They just assume, well, hey, the only reason she's in her position is because she's part of the tribe. So, which isn't true, by the way.
That's true. That's true. You're right.
You know, so there's a lot of some folks have some preconceived notions about how tribal entities or how tribal enterprises are run, and they believe it wholeheartedly. You know, it's sad, but true. You know, and sometimes I'll simply walk away and let them believe that, just because, like I said, I pick and choose my battles. And you know, other times I'll sit down and explain to them that, you know, that's not how my tribe works. And most of the people that I know that are tribal members of their tribe that run different enterprises are very intelligent and have worked really hard to get where they're at, including me.
You said if a woman had a position of power authority, men have an opinion on how they got there.
Yes. Yes.
That's interesting. I've never heard that before. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, and, you know, my opinions I don't necessarily come by just because that's what, you know, just pops in my head. I've actually been told by people, you know, maybe at different conferences, definitely not people within our organization here, but, you know, different conferences I've been to or whatnot, and, you know, people will say just that, you know, oh, well, you're here. You know, some people are very blatant with their comments on, you know, exactly how you got there or what favors you provided to be promoted. And it blows me away that, again, people think it's okay to say these things to another person. But they do. So.
Yeah,
but,
it's not good at all.
No. But there's also lots of wonderful people. Oftentimes there'll be somebody else that will, you know, step in and say something, you know, hey, that's not right what you're saying. That's not, you know, how can you have that opinion? You don't even know this person. Which then gives me hope.
You were raised by very strong women.
Yes.
And I think it was your mom said to you, you always have a choice in how you react.
Yes. You know, you can choose to. Yes, my mom was very strong. My dad passed when I was very young, and she continued to raise us, and you know, did it all on her own and set a shining example of however cliche it may be, but you know, when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade, right? So my mom, you know, lost the love of her life when she was in her mid-40s and, you know, continued to raise us children and did it all on her own. Did it all on her own. And so she gave me a great example of, you know, determination and strength. And so, how you react to something, you know, just like we were talking about with when I pick and choose my battles, I can choose to be very offended, and I can choose to react in a very aggressive manner, and by doing that, that takes so much of my energy and focuses it in a negative way. Or I could choose to try to explain to this person that that's offensive and change their opinion. And if I can't do that, then I'm going to make the choice to walk away and just learn from that.
Yeah.
That, you know,
absolutely.
I don't want to judge somebody else.
What's your advice to women coming up, especially Native women coming up through the ranks in any Native business or any commercial business?
First off, know who you are. Be confident in yourself. You know, I think confidence is half the battle. My daughter will tell you, my oldest, she says it all the time. You know, she's like, fake it till you make it. You know, so whether you're walking into your first class at university and you're nervous and scared, or you're walking into your first presentation to an executive committee, walk in there with confidence and know what you're talking about. But I think in order to do that, you have to really know who you are, be confident in who you are, and know the direction you want to go. You know, find something you enjoy. I think, and then education. I'm a huge proponent of education. You have to get your education, but you have to couple your education with real world and practical experience.
Yeah, you need the hands-on experience to make it worthwhile. No question about that.
And respect. Respect those around you.
One of the other things you said was, don't judge yourself on others' standards. On others' standards, set your own goals.
Yeah, set your goals, and you'll know when you've achieved those goals. Don't let somebody else set the goals for you, because then, you know, then you're gonna have to go back to them and say, "Hey, did I accomplish what I was supposed to accomplish?" If you set your goals and set your standards and follow your heart, you're gonna know when you've accomplished that and what you want to do next.
Amazing stuff.
I think the other thing that's really important is you follow your dreams. You know, you find something you're passionate about and that you love doing, and that's what you do. You know, I have three daughters, and they're all so different. And I don't, you know, not. One of them, you know, I've always said you have to go to school, you have to finish your education, you have to go to university. But you need to choose for what. You need to choose what direction you want to go. And honestly, university may not be for everybody, but there's other ways of getting your education. There's other options to educate yourself and to get to where you need to be. But you need to know where you're going in order to get there.
Tell us a little bit about your educational history. You know, where you went to school.
Yeah. So I went to school in Burlington, graduated high school. I went to our local community college here. And from there I received my AA. But in the meantime, I got pregnant with my first daughter. And I had her and realized that parenting is really, really hard. And I went home to my mom for a visit and then just kind of moved in. And it was just like, I can't do this on my own. Like, I need my mommy. So, you know, she let me stay there for a solid 6 months and then said that I had to get a job because she wasn't going to buy diapers for me anymore. So I came. That time the casino had been open. We had had the bingo hall for about 10 years, but our casino had only been open for a few months, maybe 6-8 months. And so there was blackjack class going on. So I came in and I took the blackjack class and I started dealing here at the casino. That was before slot machines, so it was just all table games. So we had table games in a bingo hall. And then Upper Skagit Tribe, was opening a casino with Harrah's. And so they had the Harrah's management team come in. And so, you know, the shiny new coin down the street, so I went and applied there. I got a job there, was a dealer there for a while, and then got pregnant with my son. And, you know, it was just really hard working nights. And my first two children are only 16 months apart. So basically working and had two infants. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And it was tough, but I loved it. I love my children. There's nothing I would change.
You love your children. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure your children have changed your life, really. I mean.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we were just talking.
So I came back to Swinomish, and I started in food and beverage just because the hours were a little bit better for me. And then I had my third child, and I was in food and beverage for about 10 years. But food and beverage is really, really physically hard work. And I decided that that's not... You know, I'll work hard, but 9-10 hour shifts on your feet, I knew that wasn't going to be the goal for me forever, you know. And I realized that I needed my bachelor's degree. And so I went back to school, was working full time, had three babies, and worked really hard to finish my bachelor's degree.
And it's all about work ethic, right? You got that from your mom.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. You have to think that's one of the most important things. You know, you have to have work ethic. If I, you know, before I even entered into any sort of supervisor or managerial experience, our position, you had to prove that, you know, you had work ethic. You were going to be here when you said you were going to be here. You were going to work when you were here. You were going to show up prepared. And so, you know, yeah, thanks to my mom always setting that example and working hard, that's all I knew. That's all I knew how to do. So once I had my bachelor's degree, we had a manager that was leaving from here. And so on the last day, right before they closed the position, I applied for the job.
I was great.
What's that?
And what happened? There was, I think people that interviewed you said you were by far the best person they interviewed, right?
Well, they said that I had a really good interview, but there was another lady who had interviewed who had experience. And so, like I said, you know, that practical experience, the real world experience, along with your degree is so important. But I was also a tribal member. And so that tipped the scales in my favor. You know, I was qualified for the job. I had a good work history. And so they offered me the position, but they said that. They said, you know, we're going to offer you the position because that you're qualified for it and you had a really good interview. And you're a tribal member, but don't make us regret this decision. Make sure, you know, don't make us regret not hiring the other lady. And I think
Yeah, and they never did, right? Obviously. They never did.
No, they never did. And actually, you know, and that's where I chose. How do I take that? Do I take that as, well, they don't have very much confidence in me, or do I take that as a motivator? And so, you know, I took it as a motivator. I'm not going to make you regret this decision. I'm going to prove to you that you made the right decision in choosing me.
And it turned out that way.
Yeah. You know, and then that was my very first management job here. I'd been a supervisor for several years. I was our players club or guest service manager, and you know, from there I went into player development and oversaw our host team for a while, and now I am run our marketing team, or lead. I lead our marketing team. I have a spectacular marketing team here.
Yeah. You really do. Great job, by the way.
Thanks. They do all the hard work.
I don't doubt that. So, we know that's not true, though. Okay. You and I were talking a little bit about that because it's a tough business. I mean, we have no hours. I mean, weekends, holidays, right?
Oh yeah, you're on call 24/7, so
yeah,
you know, pretty much regardless of what you have going on, if something happens here and you're needed, you know, then you gotta answer that phone. So.
Yep, the business is like that. There's no question about it. The business is like that. It's a 24/7 business. It never sleeps, right?
It never sleeps.
Never sleep.
Tell
us a little bit about your views. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think there's something a little bit special and a little bit crazy about anyone who stays in gaming for many years.
Oh, there's no question about that. I think that the the group of people that are in gaming are very unique to this world.
Yes.
No question about that. One thing for sure is, you know, they partied a little bit, right? Just a little. Nature of the business. Well,
yeah,
Dolly and I started in Vegas back in the, you know, in the late, mid to late 90s. So it's pretty, back then it was just Vegas and Reno and Atlantic City. And I think Pechanga just opened, and a couple of places that opened, but there really wasn't that much around. So it's come a long way.
You're still loving it.
Still, man. 24 years later, I love every minute of it. It's a great business. It's just a great business to be in. Tell us your views on where you think the casino business is going for the future.
For the future, you know, with the casino business, I think it's going to be really important to diversify what we offer. Everything from, I mean, you've seen just in the last 5 to 10 years, you know, really in the last 5 years, the change in the slot machines, how the slot machines play, how, you know, they've tried to freshen up table games with side bets and progressive jackpots and all of that stuff. When you can play a game on your slot machine or on your cell phone, a slot machine on your cell phone, granted it's not for money, you know, and be entertained and have all this crazy stuff happen, the same thing has to happen on property. You know, the slot machines have gotten bigger. They're 3D. I mean, you've got 3D slot machines where you're sitting there playing a slot machine and a dragon jumps out of the screen on you. You know, I mean, you've got to keep that entertainment factor up. And as the average, you know, the average age stays the same, but the average consumer changes quite a bit. And so you have to stay with what's fresh and what's going on and always do that. But also diversify. I mean, you've seen, you know, casinos are putting in bowling alleys and movie theaters in high-end restaurants and fast food restaurants, you know, just to try to stay relevant in this space.
Yeah. Yeah, it's become much, much different than it was. There's no question about it. And it's not all about gaming anymore either. Right?
Yeah. Right. So,
do you think that the Washington market is different than other markets?
Yes. The Washington market is unique unto itself. The Washington regulatory is unique unto itself. So a lot of stuff that happens in other markets, you know, cannot happen here. But the other thing is, I mean, I think we talked about this. I have 5 casinos within a 65-mile radius. So within an hour drive of me, you have 5 different options to go to. You know, we all have slot machines. We all have table games. We all have a place to eat. Majority of us have a hotel now. And so you have to find something else that's going to differentiate you from your competition. You know, and we take a lot of pride in the customer service. You know, we spend a lot of time on customer service and ensuring that our customers are taken care of.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. It's a big part of it.
Yeah.
So do you feel the environment's more competitive than it ever was?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Swinomish was here before, you know, Skagit built. Just a year or two after Swinomish was here, and then Angels, and then Tulalip was here, but it wasn't. Tulalip's a little bit different offerings than we have, but yeah, Silver Reef has opened, you know, since we've been built, the new Silver Reef anyway, and so yeah, we're all fighting for share of wallet.
Yeah, it's
Washington is also different.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I was going to say Washington is also different because we're all friendly. You know, we all talk to each other. We try to problem solve. Nobody gets together and gives away the secret sauce, but we'll all come to the table and try to help each other out.
That's cool. Yeah, I've heard that from several people in Washington. And why is that?
Because we're nice.
I love that answer. You crack me up. Oh, you crack me up. What is your advice for the younger generation coming into the business, especially the younger Native generation?
You know, stay in school. It's so competitive, you know, going into the job market. You know, so I think education is so important. But also, I touched on it earlier, respect, all of those things that go along with the soft skills, you know, knowing how to make eye contact, shake somebody's hand, say nice to meet you, that, what is it called, a servant's heart. No matter what level you're at, from, you know, from our valet team to our general manager, you know, if they're on the casino floor, you say hello to somebody when you're walking by. If somebody drops something, help them pick it up. You know, I think technical skills can be learned, but the soft skills can't. So if you have an education and you are respectful and you know how to interact with somebody, I think that's really important and things to hold on to. We spend so much time engaged electronically. That, you know, you send a text message, you call somebody, you IM them, you Snapchat them, you know how to talk to somebody in person.
Yeah, it's less and less now, unfortunately.
I know. Which I can be guilty
that's
of.
Right up, yeah, that, you know, that stuff that you're saying is right off. You know, your character is your destiny. I mean, If you know how to interact with people and make them feel good, that's a great talent to have, right?
Right. And it just be genuine. You know, being genuine is so important.
Yes, it's the key. The key to everything. Do you see any red flags in the next 5 to 10 years in terms of gaming?
I think that's why it's important to diversify, you know, how everything is becoming so social and gaming is so, you know, can be so private. And you know, when I go out and game, it's my escape. You know, I just want to sit here. I just want to unwind at this machine. I just want to play, be entertained a little bit. But that's not how things are moving. You know, the next generation of gamers that are coming up like to be social. They like to play, you know, compete against each other or share what's going on. You know, the next generation of gamer has had Facebook their entire life. And, you know, I saw a meme, and it's so true because I do it all the time too. But, you know, it's like, when I was 5, I skinned my knee. There wasn't Facebook back then, so I thought I'd share now. You know, we like to share everything now. And sitting at a slot machine, you know, and it's changing. Remember when you were in a casino, and if you pulled out your cell phone, security was on you right away because you can't take pictures in a casino and you can't have your phone out. And so, you know, that's changing. Now you see marketing departments encouraging, you know, take your picture here and share it, hashtag SWIN, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot different.
It's a lot different. But I think as long as you stay current with what's going on and always pushing that envelope, what's the next best thing, then it'll be okay. I don't think gaming itself will go away. It might become less dominant, but people still like the chance of winning.
Yeah. Should we take some calls?
Sure. Depends on what they ask. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm sure there'll be great questions. Hello, this is Tino Magnata. Do you have a question for Jumata?
Hello?
Hello, this is Tino Magnata. Do you have a question for Jumata? We can hear you, yes.
Hey, yeah, this is Ross with Market Smart. How's it going, guys?
Good, good. How's it going with you?
I'm doing well. I'm sitting up here looking at the beautiful Big Fork Lake up here in Montana. Just hiked Glacier National Park today. It was awesome.
Wow.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. So, how's the ankle?
It's healing. I've been a good patient and trying to stay off of it, but I did get a little run in the other day.
Well, I hope
it's good that you're feeling better.
Yeah. So, hey, I just had a quick question. You know, we've been working together for a couple years now, Jumata, and your team's awesome. And I know that they all, you know, really love you and respect you. I'm just kind of wondering, where'd you get your management style? How would you describe your management style? Did it kind of form organically? Or were you mentored into this type of respectful management style that you so carry?
Oh, thank you for the compliments. You know, I think a little bit of both. When I was early on in my career, I had a manager, and we were getting another manager, and the reputation of that said manager was not as friendly, and so we were all a bit nervous. And she told me, "You can always learn something. You can learn how you want to manage, or you can learn maybe how you don't want to manage. But there's always a lesson in everything that you go through." And so I took that to heart. And I look at managers that are respected and that I respect. And I said, okay, that's a characteristic that's how I want to manage. A lot of it is just mutual respect. I respect my team. I really, truly do. And I think genuine was the word that I used earlier, but I really respect my team. They work really hard for me. And I like to think of myself as more of a leader. You know, I'm down there working with them. I work alongside them. There's nothing this is the other thing I always think. If I won't do it, then I don't want to ask my team to have to do it. So.
Yeah, that's a good motto.
Yeah. But, you know, I was raised always to respect people, and respect is something that's earned. And people will do a lot more for you if they respect you. But if they fear you, maybe they'll do something. They'll do exactly what you ask, but that's all you're going to get.
Right. Cool.
Great stuff.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling in, man. Really appreciate it.
Enjoy your hike.
Yeah, guys. Yeah.
Okay, take care.
You guys take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Jumata?
Evening, Jumata. Evening, Tino. This is Nick Mossing. How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Good evening.
Great. Great evening. I'll tell you, food and beverage on your feet 9 hours, 10 hours a day is definitely a young person's job. No doubt.
Yeah.
it was good hearing your experience there with table games and food and beverage. Could you describe how those two departments and those experiences helped you in your current role?
Absolutely. I think being in table games and understanding the table games and the table game player is very helpful, because then it helps me make decisions when I'm deciding how to market those folks, what they're going to be interested in. What's important to a table games player is way different than what's important to a slot player. And so, you know, standing behind that table for a few years, dealing to those people and learning their little idiosyncrasies and what's important to a true table games player has been tremendous. Help lead what I'm doing currently. And then food and beverage, you know, food and beverage touches all aspects of the property. And so then I was able to learn the slot players because I spent time on the casino floor with them. They would, you know, talk with me. And, again, learning what's important and what's not important to a slot player. And then just I think food and beverage teaches you respect for the folks that are working food and beverage. A lot of people don't realize how hard it is to be in food and beverage. And if, you know, if a gamer loses at the blackjack table or loses at the slot machine, that's the chance they're taking when they walk into a property and decide to place their bet. So what are they going to complain about? They're going to complain that soda took too long, that beer cost too much, their coffee's not hot enough. And so food and beverage taught me patience.
You need a lot of patience for that.
Well, thank you.
Great. Thanks so much. Hello, this is Tino Magdana. Do you have a question for Jumana?
Good evening.
Good evening.
How are the two of you doing this wonderful evening?
Very good.
I'm doing great.
How are you doing? I heard you back there, but then Tino talked.
I'm doing great.
Well, I have to say a couple of quick things. I have one thing to say and a question. Number one, I love your energy and your passion, and I have the deepest respect and appreciation for your heart. I'm not hearing somebody that sits and just looks at the world and says it's easy to just keep rolling this way. I get from your voice. I mean, I'm in Wisconsin, and I'm thinking to get my car and drive into Washington because you're nice.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and you didn't even have to tell me that. I figured that out in a minute. In your experience now, the biggest thing that I question, and I'm not in the gaming business, I'm in the entertainment business, but not gaming, but it's, to me, watching gaming changes faster than bullet train in Japan. And in coming up with marketing programs, how often do you modify marketing concepts? And on your team, do you have somebody that just follows, this appears to be working really well, this doesn't seem to be?
So on my team, I do have a couple people that follow what's going on. But, you know, we as a group, take things and discuss it. And on my team, I have folks across the board with different experiences, different perspectives, and I listen to all of them. You know, I want to know what your perspective is because you're right. Things change so quickly, and I think what keeps us successful is that my team is awesome. My team is just absolutely amazing, and we've created an environment where we throw things out there that I'm just like, where in the heck did this come up with? And then a light bulb goes off, and I'm like, holy cow, this is going to work. Let's do this. You know, so sometimes I'm in my GM's office, and I'm like, hey, this is what we want to do, and he's just looks at me. But, you know, a couple their enthusiasm and their ideas with my experience, and we're able to yes, absolutely, take something off the wall and change it and tweak it just slightly so it's going to work in a gaming environment.
It makes total sense. And with your energy that you have, bringing a team of people, I'm sure you inspire them to get up and play 100%. You put all their energy into it. And it's interesting because I'm also a believer in that we need to get up every morning, look in the mirror, and listen to Michael Jackson's song, Man in the Mirror, or Woman in the Mirror, and understand that the team, you have to inspire them in a way that they can relate to and understand, and then they will do the things that you appear to be having happen. I think it's just great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I love that song. There has been a few mornings where I've looked in the mirror and the lyrics from that song have gone through my head for sure. So I'm actually smiling pretty big right now when you said that.
Oh, there you go. That's so cool.
Then you'll love it.
Thank you so much,
Randy. Then I normally tell my staffer, the key people around me, that just remember when we walk into the office, then Janet Jackson is singing, "What Have You Done For Me Lately?"
That's a good one.
I mean, I can deliver a gold and platinum record for a musical act, and then the day after we've done the pictures with the platinum record, they're all standing in a room going, "So what are you doing now? So, congratulations.
Yeah.
It's been a real treat to listen to you. Your passion is contagious. Your smile just radiates over this thing. Tina, why don't you just get off the air and let her and I have the show for a while?
Well, we're almost out of time. We got two more callers, otherwise I would. So we got to squeeze them in there if we can.
I'm going to ask you one quick question, Tina.
Is that you play
drums on your opening drum thing? You should take the credit for that. It's really cool.
No, I didn't do that. It's just a piece of canned music, but I wish I had. It is pretty cool. That's why I use it. Nondescript music. Yeah, it's like a little funky. So, all right, Randy. Thanks for calling in and supporting the show. I really appreciate you, buddy. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I had a question. Do you have a question for Jumata?
Hey, Tino, this is JB calling in from New York City.
Hey, JB, how are you?
I'm doing well, and one place we're never accused of being too nice.
That's true. You're right.
Yeah, so, you know, and listen, lots of great great life advice on this show. You know, I'm a longtime listener of the show, and so definitely a change up on this episode. So to that end, Jumata, you know, I have one of these kind of interviewee style questions, but when there's an expert like you on, it's one of the things you want to know most, which is, you know, in and of all the things that you've tried, you know, campaigns, marketing initiatives, different things that you've tried, what's one that you were pretty sure and confident was going to work, it didn't, and what did you learn from it?
Oh, that's a good question. This is my go-to because this did not work how we wanted it to work. And we did a Pepsi giveaway. So every time something happened, there was a trigger, right? We set triggers for slot machines, for Keno, for table games, for bingo. When this happened, you got a six-pack of Pepsi. The important part of this promotion, because we wanted to create excitement on the casino floor and everybody's winning type atmosphere, we wanted to see the Pepsi, six packs of Pepsi delivered to you, wherever you're sitting, whether it's the Keno Lounge or at a slot machine or a table game. And we set these triggers so we knew we were going to be giving out a lot of Pepsi products. And the idea was that people would come in and they'd be like, why did she just get a six-pack of Pepsi? Why did he just get a six-pack of Pepsi? Look at that mountain of Pepsi. And it would create this buzz around the property that everybody wins because you see that they're winning, they have this Pepsi. Oh, my gosh. Talk about a labor nightmare, for one. And then we started to get people saying, you're giving out soda pop. Everybody's supposed to be on a health kick, and you know how unhealthy it is, and what if you're diabetic? And, oh, it backfired horribly. And so I learned that there's better ways to create excitement on the casino floor, and there's a lot better ways to show that everybody wins around here.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Pallets of Pepsi. So, we had valet people cart Pepsi out to people's cars. It was horrible.
God. Great. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Jumata?
Why, of course I do, Tino. Aloha, Jumata. It's Michael. How are you doing?
I'm good. Aloha.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great, Tino. How you guys doing?
Good. Very good.
Perfect.
I'm glad you called in.
Jumata, I've known you for a little while, and just, you know, so happy with the things that you guys are doing up there. I was trying to think of a good question that wasn't a bad question, but no, to
be
honest.
I've heard some of your questions.
No. To be honest, you know, Washington's such a unique market, right? You know, it's one of those things where lots of competition, unique regulatory, unique games themselves in terms of the rest of the business. And one of the things I found remarkable during my time in Washington was how well all the different properties kind of work together to solve problems for each other. And I guess what's the big one right now that you think you guys are coming together on to help really make a difference for all the tribes there in Washington?
Well, we just had WIGA, which is Washington Indian Gaming Association. We're meeting where a majority of the tribes get together. The big topic there was, of course, sports betting and how if that we want to see this progress, that the tribes have to get together and, you know, and push it through the legislation. If not, then it won't. It'll be 10 years before it's legal here in Washington.
Yeah, right.
No, that's a great point. Obviously, kind of sweeping the nation right now with how many states are regulating and getting that on board. But I see that, you know, that's a good immediate concern. What about something that's like right in front of you, right on the cusp, where you think you got an opportunity?
Well, your former property is just about to go live with some online gaming stuff. That looks pretty,
which is exciting.
Pretty tantalizing.
So is that something where you might look to see how they do it and see if you can maybe make a better mousetrap?
You know, something like that, because I think as we were talking earlier, if you could somehow create that into more of a social atmosphere, then you're starting to bridge the gap from where people are wanting to be social, share everything that's going on, and getting their getting a chance to game at the same time.
Hey, good points. Good points, and certainly an opportunity, right?
I think so.
I want to say great show. Good to hear from you, and I hope you heal up better, all right?
All right. Thanks. It's always great to hear from you.
You too, Jumata.
Thank
Have
you
a good
so
one.
Much
Aloha,
for calling in,
know.
Buddy.
Always a pleasure, sir.
Aloha,
Thank
buddy.
You.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Jumata, it's been a great show. Thank you so much. We've run out of time, and actually went 5 minutes over, so that's a good thing. Yeah, you had a lot to say, and tonight was a very different show. It was really, really cool talking to you, and the listeners are really enjoying it and getting a lot of feedback.
Oh, good. Yeah, it was quite different, a little bit different than I expected when we first discussed the opportunity for me to go on the show, but I thoroughly enjoyed it, and thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. We sort of got off into a philosophical conversation, which was like kind of cool. I kind of like the direction we went to. Thanks so much.
Yeah,
I'm looking
totally
forward to having you back on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tino.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks. What a great show. And she's just an amazing woman. On Thursday, I have Brian Uren. He's the VP of Marketing for Maryland Live. You're going to love the show. Really smart guy. Interesting guy. He started with the company before there was even a casino there and helped build it from the ground up. That was his first and only job. He's a young guy. He's like in his mid-30s. Just a cool story. remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. Have a good night, and have a happy 4th.